session number 20457, reel 26.
Brigadier Randall, reel 26. I think you were about to say that the Dorsets had a different style of...
Well, in some respects, yes. I mean, they really sort of matter. But, I mean, everybody was at pains to make it work. I think at battalion level, I think it went very well, really. Well, I think looking back at it now, they rushed a few things through at a regimental level, which they might have, for instance, the cap badge was and remains a horrible amalgam of Latin and other tags, whereas there's somebody that sat back and thought, no, is this something? And then we designed a tie with a yellow streak across it. Well, I don't think anybody particularly, those who wants to wear a tie. I think at regimental level, and I don't want to be disloyal to my regiment, but I think everybody accepts now that it might have been better if we hadn't rushed into those sort of long-term things, which are not, because once you design a new regiment tie, you're stuck with a new cap badge. It might have been better if we'd somehow not done that. But it was all done with the best of intentions, because people felt, well, you must identify with a new cap badge. But it's been a very successful amalgamation, I think. There were lots of practical problems. I mean, putting together two lots of regimental funds was quite a complicated business, getting all that sort of stuff. But then we amalgamated in May, and it's 3 months later we went back temporarily to England and then out to Cyprus to deal with the IRCA.
Where was the battalion when you joined it? Was it in Germany?
The Germans were in Celle.
Yes.
That was 6 weeks. And then we moved down. And then we amalgamated with the Dorsets at Minden.
Yes.
Where they were. Mm.
Apart from the business of putting together the regimental funds and the amalgamation, other aspects of the amalgamation, were you doing anything else at that time? Were you sort of doing any training or...?
Well, we did, yeah, but Gary Commander was a very experienced old chap. He said, well, you don't want, obviously it's going to take time to meld two mortar platoons together,
yes,
to transport signals, everything like that. So we were rather left alone, really, to do any training at battalion level. We weren't called upon to do any exercises. Mm. In any case, we knew we were going back to UK to go to Cyprus, so...
Yes.
Our wide brigade commander more or less left us alone to get things, all these various things at sort of a low level gelled together.
Was your company then a mixed company of men from both?
Well, I was commander. When I rejoined the battalion, the CO said to me, John, will you take over headquarters company?
Yes.
Well, it's headquarters company, as you know, is not exactly the aim of every, well, I mean, that's what he wants. And so I took over the headquarters company of the Devons. And then I moved down, linked it up with the headquarters company of the Dorsets. But then after about a month, I went to CA and said, look, I'm not going to be stuck with the headquarters company. You said I'd just do it for a short time. And he said, yeah, that's quite right. And he said, I want you to take over support company, but support company will be a rifle company in Cyprus.
Yes.
So I then took over support company. And we just concentrated on ordinary, I mean, we're just like another rifle company.
What would a support company normally have had as its equipment?
Well, we'd have had machine guns, mortars, and Mobats.
Mobats being the recoilless...
anti-tank.
Recoilless
on Wombat, yes. Yeah. It had a machine gun platoon, mortar platoon, and a tank platoon. But I mean, when I took it over, I don't think we had any of those weapons, or if we had, we were just about to hand them back. And we concentrated on training just another infantry company.
Was the standard infantry training the preparation you did for going to Cyprus, or was there anything you did that was specifically directed to prepare you for Cyprus.
We did really know what the hell to expect when we got out there. I don't think we... See, I went off with the advance party.
Yes. What did the advance party do?
When the battalion... We were told that the battalion was going to be split into two. Battalion headquarters and two companies would be down in the eastern part of the island, under the sea. And my company and another rifle company would be... The main part of the island would be the western part.
Yes.
We would be on the eastern part of the island, under command of the Argyll Southern Highlanders.
Right.
And as I was a senior of the two company commanders, and much more experienced, I was not only commanding my own company, but for operational purposes, I was also commanding the other company.
Mm.
So he still commanded his company, but operationally.
You were in overall charge.
And I was sort of half a town commander. When we got the advance party went out, there was a gunner battery there. They left, and temporarily a company of the Royal West Kents came down just to hold the fort between the time when the gunners had gone and the battalion arrived by sea. The battalion came out by sea. This was a factor. So for about 3 weeks or a month, I think, I was there, I and the other company commander, and one other officer, and one or two NCOs and people. We were just sort of marking time, waiting for the battalion to come out by sea. But at the same time, studying, getting to know the operational area and getting to know the Argylls who took over while we were there.
How did you get on with them?
Extraordinarily well. I was in the happy position of sort of having two CEOs, because my own CEO down the western side of the island, western side of the island, he was my CEO, but he didn't. I got on well with him, and so he said, "I don't mess you about. You've got a lot of operational experience. As long as you do what the Argylls do, I shan't bother." And I got on particularly, I got exceptionally well with the Argylls, who were marvellous. They're so different from our soldiers. And again, the CEO there would say, "Well, this is what I want you to do. You get on with it." And I used to go to the weekly or bi-weekly district operation committees.
How were the Argyle soldiers so different? What were the differences?
Well, they're sort of jocks. all this sort of football, well, stuff. And they run that. They're much tougher with their soldiers, and they have to be. But I got on particularly well with their officers. John Slim, and they couldn't have been kinder. I and any officer who went into them, they were in proper barracks in Decalia, and our soldiers used to go down for a bath and a sort of piss up on a regular basis. Mm. I got on them admirably. If I had a problem, operational problem, I'd go and see old Colonel Chippy Anderson, and he'd come on occasionally. But he told me what he wanted to do, and I got on with it, and we did our stuff to his satisfaction.
You mentioned getting to know the area in which you're going to be operating. What were its principal characteristics from the operational view?
We were based on a place called Coffinu, which is quite a strategic point. It's on the junction of the Nicosia Limassol and the Larnaca Limassol. And that was where company headquarters was, in a Turkish village, fortunately, so we didn't have too much of a close security problem. But we were operating up into the foothills going to the northeast. So the two company area, we had five detached platoons. There's four detached platoons. and it covered quite a wide area. The gunner battery had been there before us. Had done a pretty good job. Quite surprised me. They'd really hammered them. And apart from one couple of ambushes, one of which they tried to get me but failed, but the stuffing had really been knocked out of the yoke in our area.
What was the ground like, the terrain?
Well, the southern part of our area was typical Mediterranean Cypriot. Pretty barren soil, acres and acres of olive trees, devastated by goats. A certain amount of small cultivation of other crops. But then as he got up towards the foothills, he got more and more barren and rocky and nothing at all, just sort of scrub, really. Pretty open scrub.
You mentioned you're in a Turkish village. What was the sort of balance of populations like in your area as a whole?
It was about 30% Turk and about 70%. They were in villages. There were very few mixed villages by that time. So you still got to know which were the Turkish villages and which were the Greek ones. And it was pretty obvious anyway, because as you drove up, you could see the minaret of a Turkish one or the Orthodox church of a Greek one.
You said the gunners had actually hammered the Ioka in that area. How had they done that?
Well, I think when the Ioka were quite aggressive, but I think the gunners just sort of got at them. They certainly had one or two encounters. They did a lot of cordon and searches. Time we got out there, things were beginning to sort of the political situation was getting, and I did one or two cordons and searches, but they were tended to be prophylactic, really. Mm. In other words, apart from the time when I got ambushed, but. Generally speaking, I say, let's do this village, and so we put a cordon around it in the dark, and then just go through and search it for weapons. We used to be doing one or two, but toward the end of it, Chippy and there's one particular village which I have reason to believe I was correct, had a lot of the Ioka weapons, he wouldn't let me do it. He said, we're told not to be too aggressive at the moment. So it was a fair game, really, of the opera. I mean, it wasn't very dangerous, apart from the time when the chap tried to blow me up and got somebody else. The stuffing had been knocked out of the Ioka by then. And I think the Ioka was a very different picture to what it had been a couple of years before, where in my particular area, I mean, a platoon of the Gordons was pretty well almost wiped out by the year. I used to take my chaps up there. When we took all the NCOs up the first day they got there and showed them exactly what happened. I thought, nothing like I said, this road here, this is what happened to the Gordon platoon, because I'd studied it, exactly what happened.
Well, what had actually happened?
Well, it was a classic winding sort of road, where with a sort of an ideal ambush position every quarter of a mile or so. And I think the Gordons just got caught in a truck, a couple of trucks on an ideal ambush place, and I think they mined it or something. I'm a bit vague now, but I mean, it was a jolly good illustration. You can talk generally, but if you take soldiers up and say, look, go through it. They were going up in a truck. They were alert. They had to. And that's what happened. That point really went home.
Cautionary tale.
Yes.
Had you done any anti-ambush drills or training before leaving Germany or not?
No, I don't think. I don't recall doing them there.
Did you?
I think I can't remember now. To be quite honest. I mean, you could do general ones. Yes. But until you, unless you can relate them to the sort of ground you get, really. We certainly got them. One of the things we, as soon as we got off, the company got off, we practiced them in our Turkish area.
Yes.
Made quite sure that people knew what to do if that happened.
When you first arrived at the advance party, did you get a full briefing on the political situation and the military situation that you were going into?
I didn't have one on the political one, no. I mean, we just got off the plane and Nicosia. And on the way down, I the other company commander, John Reynolds, I'm given an IO because it was a half battalion, and we just dropped off at this sort of beat up old camp, and there was a company commander of there was the battery commander of the gunners there.
Yes.
I mean, he was a chap called Hugh Toy. You probably remember his book called Springing Tiger. I'm sure quite well known. His H.M. Toy wrote a book all about the Indian National Army, and he's quite well known. His military historian, and he was commanding the battery. He gave me a jolly good briefing, but on a low level.
Do you remember what he said during that briefing?
Well, we went through the local operational situation. I mean, we toured round it all, and he showed me trouble spots. We went to most, not all, but a lot of the villages, and he gave me a very good. Which were the tricky ones? Well, there were tended to be more a sort of active Yoko members than others. Mm. I mean, it's all normal operational briefing.
Mm. What was the estimated strength of Ayoka in your area then at that time?
Actually, I can't remember now. There were about three villages which you said you really, a particular village called Kornos, which was a mining village, where he said that they are particularly hostile there. Mm. I have to differentiate between, I mean, you didn't know who the active Yoko was. If you knew he was an active one, you'd arrest him.
Yes.
It's rather like Northern Ireland, I imagine, you know, that you've got a very hardcore chaps who are here, and then the rest of them are their supporters who are pretty hostile to you.
Mm.
But all I remember was there were about three villages which you said, you know, you really got to watch these and keep a particularly careful eye on them.
What were your orders then from the Argyles? What did the commander of the Argyles want you to do?
We had this, it was called the West Larnaca Operational Committee, and it was chaired by Chippy Anderson with the local DSP and
what's a DSP?
District Superintendent of Police.
Police.
Mm. The usual sort of standing, well, that's evoked from all these sort of colonial wars.
Yes.
Where it's a joint military and police thing with the Special Branch and the Argyle's intelligence officer, and useful busy, I mean, a review of past things, and then a sort of briefing, and then a discussion of what we do in the future.
Mm.
But my orders were simply to do what I could in my area. I mean, he didn't say, I want you to go and sort that village out. Nothing like that. I mean, I would tell, this is your area. You do what you think to control it. And so I was given a pretty free hand, really, which bit what I did.
But the idea was that you should take control of the area, then.
Oh, yeah. Mm. It had to be within the sort of general terms of this.
Mm.
But he had more problems in Larnaca around that area, I think. But
Was your area really a rural area?
It was a rural area, that's right, yes. Quite a big area.
Mm. So what sort of operations did you mount in order to control
the
area?
Well, mostly, all one can do is a prophylactic patrolling, really. Mm. Which isn't particularly effective. On the other hand, it has some merits in that particularly if you vary them and try a bit different routes and that sort of thing, that it makes it difficult for a yokai to move around, to move weapons and things around. It shows the locals, they never quite know, if you just sit in your barracks, they've got a free hand. And of course, it's much more fun, interesting for the soldiers, and they get out and about, and they get to know the country, the routes that they used to call, they get to know the village headman and that sort of thing. It's not particularly effective, but it's better than sitting on the bottom doing nothing.
What sort of strength would you normally send out on
They were normally about a section.
Would they be on foot or in transport normally?
Well, a mixture. But basically, I don't think driving about in a vehicle is to use very much. But sometimes you use a vehicle to take them out or collect them back. But I emphasize to try and vary the time of day, the route in and out, the approach, so that no one could ever be quite certain when they might run into a patrol. And they had passed stop of vehicle searches and that sort of thing.
Did you patrol at night as well as at daytime?
No. We had a complete embargo on night operations.
Why was that? Seems rather strange.
Well, they're not very effective. And you're much more vulnerable to be ambushed. And they touch ambush. When I was with the Royal West Kents, they ambushed a Royal West Kent vehicle at night. And we set off with this tracker. We had a thing called a tracker killer dog. My God, it was a sort of a Doberman pincher. And we set off. We got onto the scent of this thing. It was a winter's bright starlit night. And we set off. I set off with a whole platoon and the company commander of the Royal West Kents. And we chased each other all through the night. Over a hill, bright moonlit night. Every now and again, the dog used to sort of bay and some blood curdled. And we finally got him into this village, and we threw a cordon round it. But the dog couldn't follow. Once you get to the village, there's too many dog urine, and that's what the business around. That was quite an interesting little night. But then the other time was when I broke my own rules and I delayed my return. It was after dark. I was driving, as you probably know, the Land Rover in those days, you could spot a Land Rover from any other vehicle because the headlights were in the middle. Unfortunately, just ahead of me was a Turkish forestry. He ran into this very inexpertly laid ambush where they blew him up and fired on him. And I was about 500 yards behind.
So you escaped by chance?
Yeah, they didn't hurt him, but he might have done. Mm. I was bloody angry, so I leapt out with my driver and operator, and I said, let's sort these bunnies out. And they disappeared. You know, we rushed off to try and shoot them up. But it was a lesson to me. He might have... I don't know what happened to Turkey. He's certainly very badly shaken, but in a way. But then, if you disobey your own rules, it was a lesson to me. And I met everybody and said, look what happens when the company commander disobeys his own orders, he gets hampered. So the answer is we didn't operate at night. I mean, there was no mileage to be done. Well, I say we didn't do that. If we were going to do a cordon search, and I did a few of those, well, then obviously you moved out. Some of the way by vehicles with no headlights, and then did an approach march to get round it before dawn.
Did your prophylactic patrols have any contacts that proved to be fruitful?
don't recall any.
And when you were doing a cordon and search, what sort of scale of operation would that be normally? Would it be a whole company involved or something
like that? Well, I normally had two companies. I couldn't elude the outposts a bit.
Yes.
But I drew a sort of section in from each, I think. And I had two companies. We had a joint company headquarters in this place, Coffinger. So I had two platoons in reserve there, so I used them.
Yes.
And I made up another sort of composite platoon. So in the end, it was about three platoons. Mm. Depending on the size of the village, of course.
Who actually did the searching?
The soldiers.
Did they have any special training for searching?
Yeah, we used to bring the police in, of course.
Yes.
We had to be very careful about women and that sort of thing.
How did you deal with that question?
We either had WRAC or we had, I think we had women anyway. But there was no question of we had to be, for obvious reasons, very careful not to. But normally, you put the cordon round and then you have a platoon commander would sort of put a section into a building, but you always insisted there would be two soldiers in a room at one time, so the temptation to nick something didn't. And if there was a question of women, then there would be a woman policeman in there or a WRA, a woman military policeman. Just say that you didn't cause offence to women, for all sorts of obvious reasons.
What sort of yield did you get from these searches?
Not a great deal. We have a few odd weapons, mostly old shotguns and that sort of thing. We didn't find any sort of brand new weapons. Well, because there's a limit to how much you can. You can't just. Even in those days, you couldn't just go down and pull a house to pieces and could dig up the roof or dig up the floor unless you have some specific. Because just to do it profit-actually, you have to dig every house. It would take months to do it, so that you could only just look in the more obvious places, unless you had a tip-off. If you sometimes got a tip-off that a certain house had weapons, well, then that was a different matter. You could, but
did you get many of those sort of tip-offs?
No, the intelligence was not good.
Why was the intelligence not good? Because we'd been in Cyprus for some time. We had a police force there, presumably a special branch.
Well, I don't think it. I don't know why it wasn't very good, but the Oka were pretty. I don't think they were particularly easy to infiltrate. Fact was that there was not very much top-grade intelligence. It certainly didn't come. It didn't get down to me anyway at my level. The chief inspector in my area was a Turk. He could tell me who was stealing the goats and all, he knew all that sort of business, but he was a pretty sort of, he was a decent enough chap, but he wasn't a very ball of fire. But the police was almost entirely Turkish, and the chances they'd get any hot information from a Greek source was very. So we wouldn't get any at local level. It might come down from brigade or from battalion headquarter level. The fact was there that we didn't get very much.
Now, you mentioned that you had five platoons in outposts.
Four platoons in outposts,
yes. What sort of local protection arrangements did they have?
Well, they were normally sort of, they were in buildings, and they were wired in, sentries. Controlled entrance by vehicle.